Farewell, Drew Barrymore, Ted Danson, Mary Steenburgen. Hello, John Voight. The movie business is here. Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. Even in the winter, they're making movies here. And that's usually when we want to go see them. Our subject today, the Anchorage International Film Festival and films in general. Our phone number, 1-800-478-8255. 478-TALK in Anchorage, a local call of 550-8422. Email talk at APRN.org. Has the motion picture industry been interfacing with you? Well, tell us about it on Talk of Alaska statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by Penn Air, providing scheduled service to 36 communities throughout Southwest Alaska. Reservations online at pennair.com. And by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Well, happy birthday, Anchorage International Film Festival, and welcome back to the show, founder Tony Shepard.
Thank you, Steve. It's nice to be back. And yes, it is a big birthday this year, big 10 years. So
here you are. You're an advertising guy, basically. Why did you ever want to?
I hate that term, by the way. That's like used car slime, right?
Hey,
sorry, used car guys.
Kept my family alive for years and years and years. Yeah. So why did you decide to start this thing?
Well, you know, being in advertising, I end up producing and creating a lot of video and television product. And I think after so many years of doing that, realizing I had this cool medium that has always fascinated me ever since I was a young child, that I could actually now produce film for TV, you know, a dream that I had as a child, I found myself in this quagmire where I was kind of going brain dead because it was all this retail, hate to call it crud, but it was crud, and I just felt like I needed an escape. I hung out with a lot of guys in town locally that were artists of one sort or another, and I would go and twiddle my thumbs and think, oh my gosh, you know, I'm a creative person too. I could do this. I didn't have, the pocketbook to go big time and try to produce things that were, out of my limit. But I realized that, you know, I had the motivation to indulge and be part of this creative aspect of film and the industry. And how can I do that? And it was like, well, it was just over a cup of coffee with a friend who was going to film school. Hey, there's no film festival up here. And I'm from Seattle originally, and I've got some good stories about the Seattle International Film Festival. But that was kind of the spark that there was no film festival. I was in this industry. I wanted to get creative. And hey, let's just make one happen. You know, how hard can it be, kind of a thing. So that was, you know, really the catalyst, just those things
so
at
now,
that moment.
Yeah, so 10 years, and at first you were like using every screen you could find. And this year you kind of trimmed it back a little bit, but you've got like more filmmakers actually coming. You probably have the highest quality field you've ever had, and you've got like workshops and things. You sort of intensified that part of it. So clearly there's an evolution going on here.
Yeah, it's evolved nicely. You know, over the years, there was a lot of hiccups and you know, the frustration of trying to maintain an all-volunteer organization. So 10 years into it, we realized this year it had to be more about the quality versus the quantity. Because in the past, we've had some big ambitions. We had 5 venues at one time, and that was just really insane. So the board, with some good guidance from Rand Thornsley, Michelle Miller, you know, really helped me kind of come with to a conclusion. And it was kind of tough to swallow at first, but we needed to reduce and refine, but it made complete sense once, you know, we got there.
Tony had his come to Jesus moment. Is that
what you're telling me? Oh my God, yeah. It was a big come to Jesus moment. I still have a hard time dealing with that, and that is in the aspect of that, you know, I love variety. I want to have a big, huge program, but what it boils down to is logistics and funding, and we had to do it wisely. So thanks to a good team and a lot of wisdom over the years, we're actually going to present the best festival ever as far as the experience.
Yeah, and I want to get down to talking about what is actually being presented, but first I want to broaden it out to the wider issue of the industry in Alaska, because it's clearly one of our fastest growing industries is being on the crew of motion pictures.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's been nice to see. You know, that was part of my ambition, too, back in year one. I thought, well, you know, not only do I want to be part of this culture or this art, I also would like to see and the industry kind of come to terms with itself in Alaska, because I knew that, you know, I know that we have this potential. We all know that we have this potential. And I knew that I really alone, the film festival wasn't going to accomplish much, but what I felt it could do, and that is it could invite and entice filmmakers from around the world, producers to come up. And because the incredible mystique of Alaska, we accomplished just that. I mean, we had Premiere Magazine, we had the Sundance Channel, we had producers from Paramount come up over the years and visit us. So that was part of the catalyst of, I think, I'd like to say, along with, of course, instrumental aspects of something like a guy named Senator Johnny Ellis and legislation that has really helped us. But the festival has done its little part in chipping away in making, I guess, bringing the stage of filmmaking to the rest of the world.
Yeah. And for instance, friends of mine were painting scenes for we were probably as many people listening right now were part of a crew at some point or other. It's not even seasonal work. There's a shoot, you get some work, and then you look for the next gig.
There's a lot of happy guys out there, yeah. Steve. You know, I know a lot of these people that, for instance, worked for the PAC and the IOTSI, I believe is the union, uh-huh. If I'm saying that correctly. But they have just been thrilled about being able to find steady, well-paying jobs this time of the year. And it just, you know, so the spectrum of what this industry is going to do for Alaska is so beyond the jobs as well. I mean, it's the publicity, it's everything that comes with that. But yeah, it's providing a lot of jobs, a lot of happy people.
It's
right going
to be really interesting for the pioneers, you know, the people like you and the people that have been trying to do this all along, the Sprocket Heads people and so forth, who have thrown years and years into it, to actually see this change and the way the pioneers are going to be viewed, say, 10 years out from now, is just going to be extremely interesting.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, it's amazing how all of a sudden, you know, it's been this long wait. And I know there's been other people involved in helping promote our industry. And so, of course, I'm just, you know, a little speck of dust on the outside of this bigger picture. But it's amazing how then all of a sudden it's happened. And we went from literally, you know, watching these films about Alaska made everywhere else going, oh, my God, you know, this sucks, basically. And then to all of a sudden now, you know, these two big films coming right at us right away. There's a lot yet to, you know, be seen too as well.
Well, yes, and I think that is a perfect prompt to bring in Katie Miller. Katie, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Great.
We're slipping and sliding, let me put it that way. It's a great time to be inside listening to the radio in Alaska today.
A whole
swath of the state is just completely iced over.
I know. I feel sorry for those whales guys that are probably outside on the ice trying to shoot.
Yeah. Well, Katie, Tony suggested that we get in touch with you, and it's been really interesting to find out more about you, because you are basically an Alaskan, went to West High, got yourself in the theater world in New York City, then moved into the movie business. You now run your own outfit, Patina Pictures, and this, I guess you would say, would be production financing is what you're doing, and you're finding yourself now commuting back and forth between your hometown and what we thought was the movie capital of the world.
Yeah, I know. It's been interesting. I find it very ironic that the film industry has come up to Alaska, and now I'm coming back. And it makes my dad extremely happy.
So you have family up here then?
I do. I grew up midway on the Talitchulitna. Talaheim Lodge is my dad's lodge. And so I grew up out there, always wanted to get into the industry, and I think it probably just has to do because we had like 6 to 8 guests in our face constantly every single time that I was growing up, and so you were constantly acting in some sort of way, and that was a perfect liaison right into the industry. And so I left when I was about 17 and went to New York, stayed there for about 7 years, and now I've been in Los Angeles for about the last 7 years. And so it's been a really great ride, and it's really incredible to see all this film frenzy happening in my hometown and be able to come back and really mesh my two worlds together. So it's been really great.
So are you actually going to have like a suite or a storefront or something like that? How are you going to work Patina Pictures into the Alaska scene?
Well, I'm going to start an Alaskan-based production service company, and that's called Feature Alaska. And in terms of a storefront, ideally we'd have a storefront in the next few years, but right now it's just about implementing. My whole purpose is really making sure that we embrace the infrastructure around the tax credits that they just passed. I go to a lot of conferences, a lot of things down in Los Angeles, and really anytime tax credits comes up, everybody's eye is on Alaska. We're always in the top five. We've got really comparable tax credits to Michigan and Louisiana, which are booming right now. And it's just about, you know, whether or not the community and the government and everybody in Alaska is going to pull together and really put the infrastructure in place. And so everyone is kind of eyes on Alaska and watching to see what happens with whales, making sure that tax credit sells. And as soon as, you know, we have a few more years under our belt, we're going to see a lot of movement towards Alaska. And so that's what my whole thing is, really making sure that we have the crew and the Alaskan train crew and that workforce development element, you know, around the infrastructure. So I'm going to be helping train up Alaskans for the film industry.
So I'm wondering how this works with the union and so forth. I guess there would be some shoots to be union and some are not. How does it work?
Yeah. I mean, there's lots of different unions. So it is the IA, Tony, like you said, and then that's the major crew union. But then the DGA, the Directors Guild of America, or the Directors Union, and then we've got the Writing Union, which is the WGA, the Writers Guild of America. You know, there's a lot of different unions that are in place on that. And then also the Camera Department is a completely different union.
Uh-huh.
And so you can do, you know, you can do films that are non-union crew, but then possibly union writer and union director. And so really during this training process, I want to be able to bring all of the unions together and say, okay, you know, come together during that curriculum think tank that I call it, and building up that curriculum so everybody is working towards their hours and working towards their union card. So whether or not the project's going to be union or not, we're all on the same page, and you know, we all have that common goal at the end.
Yeah. Well, Katie Miller, I'm glad you could join us by telephone from your office in Venice, California. You could probably just as easily have been in Alaska today. But
I could have, although I wouldn't have the beautiful view of palm trees and sunshine.
Oh, stop.
So sorry to rub it in, guys.
Yeah, I think that's one of the reasons that Tony's been talking about how he wanted to get, you know, expressions of the imagination and so forth here. But I think also there was the idea that it's really totally the dead of winter, and this is something to do in the dead of winter. Tony, don't you think that was a little part of it?
Yeah, well, actually, it was a big part of it. The wintertime, of course, for at least the likes of me, you know, I tend to huddle at home and just, you know, kind of hunker down and watch film. And here's an opportunity to go see it on the big screen and provide a great dose of a, you know, excellent mix of international film. It's a chance, you know, to just really indulge in a medium that you don't have to do, you don't have to, you know, you'd stay warm doing, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
And we have a great lineup, and I'm sure you'll get to the fact that Katie has an excellent film in the festival as well that
no,
she helped
actually,
produce.
I didn't even know that. Come on.
I'm glad I mentioned
it.
Get
it out.
Uh-huh.
I know. I've got a great film. It's so funny. I normally am not a big horror film kind of girl, but I got hooked up with the Butcher Brothers, which are incredible directors. They're a directing duo. They've done a lot of horror films in the past, and then I got involved with them just socially around Los Angeles, and they kept on bugging me that I needed to get into the horror genre. And little by little, they broke me down, and they gave me a script that is my perfect mix of really great business model, lots of fun horror. There's a genre and an audience group that's totally built into that. So for my company's mandate, you know, that fulfilled that mandate. But then also there is this creative aspect to them. And I mean, seriously, I hope they can come up and talk in front of you guys in Alaska, because those two, it's their brains work in such random ways, and they put that in the script. And so it's very creative and yet a horror film, which is why it got into Sundance this last January and was able to play within that that front. So it's been a fun life span for this one. And also, it's got three different Alaskans in it. So myself from West High, and then also Joseph McAleer, who graduated from West, and then Brett Roberts. So it's a really exciting time to kind of come home and be able to play in that forum.
Okay, so which one is it?
It's called The Violent Kind. It's on Thursday.
The Violent Kind.
The violent kind, yeah, from the producers of Halloween and Chainsaw Massacre. So I'm sure you guys can kind of guess how that's going to go down.
It's intense, but it has this nice sci-fi feel to it, so it's not just, you know, strictly a horror genre, at least that's the way I like to describe it, Katie.
Does this get one screening?
One screening.
What time of day are you going to do this one?
It's 10:15 on Thursday night, but it's definitely worth coming out, and I do hope we could get the filmmakers up here to the Butcher Brothers. You know, this is part of a struggle for from my perspective as being the founder and having that vision. We could never get enough funding to get filmmakers up here. It's so important to get the artists here, and we got to entice them because they go around the world to film festivals, and they they're using their credit cards and whatever else. So,
well, I mean, I'm sure are you able to like trade out with hotels and stuff like that?
We do have some trade out associations. The Inlet Towers this year is our big hotel sponsor. Yeah, and they've been fabulous over the years. But ultimately, you know, and I'm not like here to beg or proselytize, you know, the fact that we need funding, we need help. But what I'm getting at is that, you know, we are here to I like to look at ourselves as we're an art gallery. We're here to hang other people's art. But we want the artists to come and engage and indulge. And if they can make it, we're working to see if they can. But either way, whoever comes with the film that is in the film festival, that to me is the icing on the cake. When you get to meet the filmmakers and ask them, why did you do this? Why did you do that kind of a thing? Or just even hear them just, you know, glow or gleam about their film. It's really the connecting with the filmmakers that make it a festival.
Yeah, I'm trying to place. Is there a film I would know that the Butcher Brothers did? When I think Texas Chainsaw Massacre, I think or Tobe Hooper. I think years and years ago,
they did this film called The Hamiltons, and it was a really kind of slow rolling success. And so it came out pretty small. Lionsgate picked it up, and it was in the After Dark series. And then it became kind of a cult classic, and it's really big. For some reason, it really hit in the UK and in Australia and a lot of different foreign parts, which is great for a producer standpoint because you always want to bring in those foreign folks. But that's what they did, and then they went to Sony and did April Fool's Day, and then this is their follow-up to April Fool's Day.
All right.
And I just have to say, I'm actually a fan of the horror genre. It's funny, the older I get, all of a sudden I became this fan of the horror genre, but I just love their film. It has the right level of intensity, and it also has just that imaginative screenplay that makes you, you know, it's like it's a page turner. You just follow it all the way to the end. And so I got to encourage anybody that, you know, would potentially or even not potentially want to go see a horror film is to come to the Beartooth on Thursday, December. I believe that is the 9th. And come check out the film. Even if the filmmakers aren't going to be there. Katie, you're going to be there, right?
Oh, I'm going to be there for sure.
So there we go. If Katie's there, then that's the goal is, you know, having somebody associated with the film, and can't wait to see her there and present the film.
See, I was kind of, I've been perusing the program here, and I was kind of thinking the movie you were talking about, because you said a built-in constituency and so forth, was Ticked Off Trannies with Knives. But no!
No! Yeah. Although that sounds like my next one. That's right, in my company mandate.
Well, yeah, so can you tell me about this? Sounds absolutely hilarious.
Well, you know, it has its really dark side to it, but it's very empowering at the same time. We were kind of debating, is this going to be offensive to the gay and lesbian community? And it's like, no, not at all. It's empowering. But I'll just have to tell you my little story is when film.
So they're combining the martial arts?
It's just some ticked off trannies with knives getting a little retribution or revenge for a bunch of, you know, ignorant assholes in society. Do you have to beep that out? I'm sorry about that.
No, we don't. It's live.
But anyhow, it's a fun film. It's well made. It's just a great film. You have to see it for yourself. But I'll have to tell you my quick little story here is when I saw the film on the list, I just told the emailed the programmers. I said, we just have to select it just by title alone.
That is a great title.
Crazy. So you've got a big stack of features, and how do you array them through the period of the festival? And then you're doing like a best of afterwards, right?
Yeah, we'll do a best of. It's not a science.
So you're
going to
have
here,
your morning, even in the morning? I mean, I think one interesting thing about film festivals is it's all the film you could possibly stand, you know, until your eyeballs drop out.
Yeah, I got to say, it's funny because I see fans that go to the festival that actually are more fanatics than I am. They have the guide out. They try to make it to every film. I'm not sure exactly what your question is, Steve, but I'll just have to say that we have a hodgepodge, potpourri of great film. You know, it's interesting. Each year, you know.
Well, in order to get to a feature, am I going to have to try and schedule, especially hard for me, of course, because I have to get up so early in the morning, but am I going to have to schedule myself so that, you know, kind of ration my time if I want to get in a bunch of these features?
Yes, I will have to say, look, if you're really into going and doing the festival the right way, plan in advance. Look, there's only, I'd have to say about half the films only have one screening this year. That was part of that tightening the ship and kind of slimming things down just to control things to make it a better experience. Unfortunately, that means, you only have one opportunity in some cases. So it's going to be difficult, but I do believe that if you plan accordingly and you want to see most of the features, you'll be able to do that because we do have the ones in competition primarily that will screen twice.
You know, I become fans of some things that I've seen there, and then they turn out to be, I try and recommend them to my friends, and they can't find them. You know, like, for instance, Wrecking Crew, you can't get the Wrecking Crew. Chronic Town just finally came out on DVD.
Oh, did it good. Yeah. That was that feature that was filmed in Fairbanks and just a dark story about...
But very well done.
Excellent film, and I just love those independent features that come through and are filmed here, and then lo and behold, you get the submission. You had no idea it was even, you know, being made, but... we just, really have a lot of film that you really have to come out and see. And there's, by the way, to get this out, too, because I'm all over the, I'll be all over the map here, so pardon for my lack of focus. But when you have as many films as you do in your head, as I do, you tend to kind of bounce around. But let me stick this out there, and that is we have The Beekeepers, which is a locally produced film by Bryant Maynard, and he'll have
that. So this is, of course, a documentary, right?
No, it's a feature length. It's a feature narrative, I mean. So, yeah, this year we had several feature films submitted by Alaskans. It was unbelievable. We didn't have room for all of them. And I don't owe apologies to anybody, but I have to say I wish we had more room. I'm so sorry we couldn't accept your film. Yeah. There's so many Alaskan films this year that we could not find room for that it's kind of put the fire under my butt to look at Snowdance next year and see if we could expand that program.
Okay, you better explain what Snowdance is.
Oh, thank you. Snowdance is any film that's made by an Alaskan. The primary, either the director or the producer or one of the lead actors have to be in it. But it's a film basically made by an Alaskan. We're refining our rules on that. Next year, it's going to be just be made entirely in Alaska. But right now, we consider Snowdance any film that's made by an Alaskan.
So that would rule out, like, those, you know, where in the travelogues and stuff, such like that, when sometimes really interesting, made by Alaskans.
Right. So a film could be made in Alaska, but if it's not made by an Alaskan, it's not considered a Snowdance film.
That's how it works.
We have to, but that's, like I said, we're going to really look at the Snowdance program in the future because we realize it's a growing program and we need to have a better philosophy and more support for it.
All right. And of course, how does it financially, I mean, you get people buy the passes and then it's sort of an all movie pass. Then you've got the entry fees, and then you've got the gate, you know, when people come. Where do the finances turn? Is it basically you've got to keep this whole house of cards erected in order to have a festival? You've got to have a fairly large gate, and you've got to have the people that buy the passes, the memberships, and sponsorships, of course.
Yeah, well, you know, we have to plan very carefully. Our budgets are tight, and we don't pay very many people, though. This is the first year that we really started establishing some salaries for some key, which had been volunteer roles over the past, but some key personnel within the festival. I can say, though, that, we're growing, and we're also, very fortunate that, for example, the Beartooth is so supportive that, you know, the gate, the relationship we have with them and the money we get through the Beartooth is really a big dose of our funding. So if it wasn't for the Beartooth and we had to lease some other facility out, I don't know if we'd be able to afford to put this show on. But overall, between the submissions and some of the donations and the gate, yes, we make enough money to really put on pound per pound one of the best festivals in the States.
Well, now, do you think it is to the point now, and do you know, do people actually come to Alaska, you know, that aren't filmmakers who have entered in the competition, but just because this is a film festival and they know they're going to get to go to a film festival and see a lot of movies.
Yeah,
I mean, it's mostly Alaskans that go to this.
Yeah, it's mostly.
But I know some come into Anchorage for this from other parts of the state.
Yeah, you know, they do. And it's funny because, you know, it's like with any festival, you get fans from all over the world. So occasionally we get people showing up that don't have a film in. They just heard there was a film festival in Alaska and they wanted to come check it out and partake. I don't know if these people are independently wealthy or if they're just that crazy about film in Alaska. What's the motivation? But I think it's just the experience, because festivals are fun. Film festivals tend to attract interesting people. Filmmakers are very creative. They're very outgoing for the most part. They're very opinionated. And so I think people were attracted to that aspect of it. Not the Hollywood glitzy glam thing, but just the filmmaker and the art form.
Our telephone number is 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. A local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. Email is talk@APRN.org. We've got Tony Shepard, the founder of the Anchorage International Film Festival, which, believe it or not, is 10 years old now, and Katie Miller of Patina Pictures, an Alaskan who is starting to relocate her motion picture financing outfit in the state of Alaska. So she's kind of got bases both in Los Angeles and Alaska. Caroline, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Yes, good morning, Steve. And Mr. Shepard, and I'm sorry I didn't catch the lady's name. I should have been listening more
closely. Katie.
Well, I wasn't going to go for first names, but Katie, yes, I remember that part. I want to thank you for doing this. It's tough to get something started. I remember in 95, I'm looking at the very nice, I won't call it glitzy, but certainly highly professional booklet from the Northern Lights International Film Festival. Mm. That went for several years, and I don't think as long as you've been able to go. And this particular year had 51 films in it, so maybe they bit off more than was chewable. Obviously, something didn't work because it didn't last.
Well, how many have you got, Tony?
Well, that 51 that year, that's incredible. I didn't know that, because that was actually kind of before the internet age, and you know that's really the main key component in promotion and in submissions and all that. This year we have, you know, I used to know this. I used to know every film, and
know,
I'm getting a little lazy in my old age, but I'm focused on features. But this year I do know we have upwards of over 120 films.
Wow.
Mind you, a lot of those are short. I also have to say feature-length films that are documentaries or feature narratives. We have, I'm going to say, right around 50 of those.
Wow.
But if
no way you could possibly see all those.
Well, the short films are in compilations. Yeah. So, you know, but they all have their little, you know, personalities and, you know, they're an entity within themselves. So even though they're short films, there's still a film within the program that needs to be seen, deserves to be seen, but still it adds to just the whole size and scope of what we're trying to present.
Caroline, thanks for pointing out about the pioneers. Yeah, go ahead.
Thanks.
Before I ask you the main question I call for, I wanted to mention that in 95 we had oil going for us, and we didn't have someone like Johnny Ellis to put through the tax thing. So in addition to location, I think that timing is crucial in success. Because, you know, it's really nice to see this finally coming. I mean, there was the film office with the state, and there was a Runaway Train. You know, the effort was there, and people were trying. But it's just like, you know, the interest wasn't there. And the money, of course, we're looking for ways to make money in Alaska now. Before we had to, didn't have to do that. But, Steve, my question for you is, if it's approved by PB, public broadcasting ethics and so forth, can these folks say what the cost of the ticket to cover the entire film is? Because I've thought about doing that, and this year I want to put my oar in the water in support of what they're doing.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I really appreciate that, Caroline. It's nice of you to ask, and thanks, because it's good to get this out in the air. But our individual tickets are $8 a piece, and our all event and film passes are up to $105. This gets you into the galas and everything, and then our all films pass are $90. But I'll just say, you know, compared to the rest of the film festival world out there, they're very affordable, and if you use them to their fullest, you're going to get more than your money's worth. But yes, they're, once again, $8 for individual screenings, $90 for all films pass, and then if you want a special pass that gets you into the galas as well, those are $105, and they're so valuable to us as well to be able to support our continued efforts to keep this thing going.
Thank you so much.
All right, Caroline, yeah, thanks for your words of encouragement here. We're talking about the movie business in Alaska as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from
Fire Island Wind, offering a renewable energy alternative to natural gas for South Central Alaska. Information at fireislandwind.com.
ACHEA, the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association, has been asked to administer the new temporary federal insurance program that allows individuals with a qualifying pre-existing condition and who have been uninsured for at least 6 months an opportunity to purchase health insurance. Capacity is limited, so contact an insurance broker or ACHEA immediately. More information at ACHIA.com. This message sponsored by ACHEA Fed.
It's Talk of Alaska. We're talking about Alaska's fast-growing motion picture location industry and the Anchorage International Film Festival, now 10 years old. It's really fascinating that Alaska is getting to be a place where people talk movies quite a bit. My people talk to your people. And, you know, it's so miserable out there. I was thinking that this would be a great day to forget about what it's like outside and get in front of that screen in an afternoon and watch some big, let's say, historical Chinese costume drama. And guess what? There is one.
There is, yeah.
Amazing.
It's, and this is a perfect time of the year, isn't it, to indulge in other cultures and societies and just really foreign lands. And
that's Chinese movie. I was looking at the preview of this thing. This is a huge production.
Oh my gosh, if this was made in Hollywood, it would be, I'm telling you, it would be a $200 million film.
Yeah.
It's incredible from the sets and just the cast and everything that's in it. All I could say is it's a really fabulous production made in China and also in Taiwan, I believe. But you could read the description. It's in the program guide, but it centers around the banking industry in the late 1800s in China. And interestingly enough, that's a very interesting story, which I never knew anything about until I saw this film.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's you know, like you said, these huge production values in here. We're talking to Tony Shepherd and Katie Miller of Patina Pictures by telephone from California at the moment, although she's back and forth between Alaska these days, being in the film industry. Katie, do you think Alaska's light is a selling point for motion pictures? I have talked to filmmakers who really treasure that low in the horizon kind of lighting in a film that sort of puts a golden edge on things. And I guess in Alaska, you can get if you have the sun, it's not overcast, you can get a lot of that.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's incredible, especially for the summer. I mean, that's the sun goes down, it kind of stays at that horizon for a good 5 hours sometimes, and that is amazing. So it is a really good coup for Alaska at that point. I mean, the unfortunate side is there's a flip point to that, and, you know, during the winters you don't have too much light. So that's something that we're working through, and, you know, this, you know, there's lots of talks about a studio space coming up, which will really help it out. And,
well, yeah, that's the next thing I wanted to ask you is where, what are our big hurdles, and what everybody says is soundstage. We got to have a really big building to make movies in.
Yeah, I think, you know, and when I talk about the infrastructure and really building that up, I think that means workforce development and really making sure that we have trained Alaskans that can work on the crews. Also having equipment there so we can hire and, you know, we can get equipment directly from Alaska and not have to ship it up from L.A. And then also the studio space is a really big component of it. And so, you know, it's really taking the entire community to pull together and the politicians and all of that support to kind of dive in and really lay this infrastructure aspect in a way that's going to make make this entire thing successful. And so I think there's a lot of really good talk. And, I mean, you mentioned Senator Johnny Ellis, which has been an incredible supporter and just so amazing to have in your corner. And so he's, you know, he's looking to really promote this for next year and see what we can do to really push this forward in a big way.
Well, good, and it appears that the tax credits, from what you say, are basically competitive with other locations, and that's actually turning the trick. And it kind of amazes. I think it amazes a lot of people when one of these incentive things actually turns out to work.
Oh my goodness! I mean, you can't, and it's actually, we all talked about timing. It's such a perfect time for Alaska to get in the tax credit game because, you know, with the economy right now, everyone's looking for the cheapest way to make their films. And then for Alaska to come on board with these really competitive rates, then, I mean, it made everybody perk up. So it's a great time to kind of, you know, open those things up to filmmakers. And it's also great to be right in line with Michigan, which right now everybody is going to Michigan. It's a $400 million industry at this point. Louisiana is huge. And then, you know, there's definitely, obviously, Canada is what our main competitor is going to be. So it's a really good time to get in the game. I think the tax credits are really, really incredible. And now it's just going to take the entire community to pull together and let their politicians know that they really want this to happen in Alaska so we can kind of push this through in the way that we need to.
I remember people will joke about Jerry Lewis teaching a film course at a university, but the fact of the matter is that you know, there were some pretty good filmmakers that took Jerry Lewis's classes, and I am thinking that we should not neglect the academic sector in seeking to develop this this workforce. I get this one by email from Maya Salganik, who is a term assistant professor. Yeah, at UAF, Department of Theater and Film Studies. She says, I am grateful that Katie is helping to establish a workforce development program in the film industry in Alaska. 2 years ago, faculty proposed a film major degree program at UAF. I want to encourage students interested in making films to write to the UA Board of Regents, encouraging them to reconsider the film major program proposal. Had the program passed 2 years ago, we would have had more of a running start in meeting up with the current film industry demands. The film industry is here, yet most students interested in making films must still leave the state for their education. Thanks for a great program, Maya.
No.
Yeah, that's what you did, right? I mean, there was...
Oh, I absolutely left, yeah. In order for me to really go for this industry and be successful in it, I had to go to New York or L.A. In my mind, you know, you could go someplace else, but New York or L.A. were my choices, and so I decided to go to New York. And it's really great to be able to, I mean, I've been working with Maya on this whole workforce development, and she's been incredible support, and I think we're definitely going to get into business here coming up in the next 2 years, and really she's going to be a part of that curriculum and part of that planning process. And ideally speaking, you know, we'd have these apprenticeship programs where these kids that are interested in the film industry would get involved, and they would do, you know, 144 hours of classroom training either at UAA or UAF, and then go right into workforce development where they would have mentors from LA that would come up and they would work with them. And it would be a year or 2 years. And then ideally, if they want to go back and do, you know, get a BA or a BFA in a certain concentration, which is screenwriting, directing, cinematography, then they could transfer to like a UAF and complete their degree.
Oh, yeah.
That's kind of what we're putting in the force right now.
Interesting. And, you know, I'm just thinking faculty could make a big difference here. You know, you think of the Lucas and Spielberg and all these people in this sort of competition with USC had their batch, and UCLA got their batch. And you know, these people became our leading motion picture auteurs. And it really was in the culture. They all knew one another from school.
Yep.
And you know, we could have that here.
You can absolutely have that there. You know, and we've been talking to, I've been talking to AFI, which is American Film Institute down in Los Angeles, and they're really excited about working together with me on this and bringing up, you know, grad students or even their staff to help kind of launch this entire course. And so then our kids from Alaska would be trained by AFI, which is an incredible, incredible program. And so that's, you know, in the works. And then also having that union component to come up and really teach them how, you know, what it takes to be in the union and kind of work up towards their union card. And then also having other really great people from LA coming over there and doing workshops, like Canon and Kodak are very interested in going up there and premiering their top-of-the-line equipment.
Oh,
well.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Do you like that, Tony?
Of course. You know, it's just nice that there's people like Katie and Senator Ellis, and I mean, many several others that I don't even know that are helping harness this energy and taking, I have to just say, advantage of the opportunity, because the film that are being produced now, the Wales film and this upcoming film with John Voight, really is starting to make people raise their eyebrows and go, wow, you know. This is amazing. We are having a little film industry here, but this will also help inspire these, you know, young wannabe filmmakers that really have the desire to get into this industry. And we know it's an expanding industry. It's amazing how far independent film, at least this aspect of filmmaking, has really grown in the last 15 years.
Hey, I mean, I'll tell you, I was in Pittsburgh for about the third Night of the Living Dead movie, and the whole town got involved in it.
Yeah.
Oh, I want to be a zombie. Put me loose in the Monroeville Mall here. So what kind of makeup can I get? Well, I want to be a really cool rotting zombie.
And the cool thing about the film industry is that this is an industry, an art form that just about 99.9% of people can dig and relate to. So the potential it has to expand here in town, and the more people that are out there that see that potential and actually make a commitment to help harness and be able to create businesses and educational institutions that support the industry is a major bonus, and I think it's just going to help us as a community, as a state, grow here in Alaska. Yes.
I got a call from Sitka. Lexi, welcome to Talk of Alaska. Hello, Lexi, you there? Lexi,
yes.
In Sitka. Hi!
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good.
Good.
You're on the air.
Thank you. Yeah, I just wanted to call in. I produced the mini documentary Rain Power, which takes place here in Sitka. It's 11 minutes long, and it's part of the film. It's one of the films in competition in the snow dance category.
Oh, well, congratulations.
So tell me about it.
Yeah, so what the film, the premise of the film is that the community of Sitka has been working in really collaborative and innovative ways, trying to become more of a self-sufficient community and more of an environmental and economic and socially sustainable community.
Yeah, it's been. We've talked to some people, into that the community gardening thing down there. We've had them on the show. It's been really interesting.
Yeah, you know, there's just tons of community projects similar to that. And one of the things that the community is really concerned about is becoming more energy independent. And so the premise of this film is, you know, it kind of shows the challenges as well as the successes that we've had as a community in trying to become less dependent on oil and more self-sufficient by producing our own power. And, you know, it's a really local story, but I think the most important message that it carries is this idea of communities working together for local solutions. And it's really a story that can be echoed around the globe as we kind of all try and work in our own ways to address global issues such as climate change and foreign oil.
So what do you do? You make this 11-minute, what seems clearly a kind of a message type of film. And then what do you do? Where's your venues for it? I would think festivals is pretty much it.
Well, you know, we're definitely going to enter in some film festivals, of course. But, you know, part of the other, one of the different messages in this film is looking at our specific type of power that we need to pursue. One of the types of power that we need to pursue to be sustainable in Sitka is hydropower. And down here we're looking at, you know, micro hydro projects and alpine lakes that have a very low environmental impact and no impact on anadromous fish such as salmon.
Right.
And I don't know if you know much about the laws nationally, but hydroelectric energy isn't considered to be renewable because of the types of dams that are seen in the lower 48. And so part of this idea was spurred as, you know, we wanted a creative way to educate national policymakers on our situation up here. So definitely part of the idea is to get this film to our national policymakers in Congress.
Cool. I want to thank you so much for your call, Lexi.
Yeah, well, thank you so much.
Thanks for contributing to the film festival, too, by the way. And I love Sitka. It's my favorite little town in Alaska.
Yes, it's something, all right. Let's go to Ron, joins the program. Is this Ron Holmstrom?
This is Ron. Hi, Steve.
How you doing, Ron? Sounds like you're running out of voice today.
Oh, it comes and goes.
Yeah. Well, you've been kind of a busy guy. I mean, I've seen casting calls coming out from you during the shoot here.
Yeah, there's been a lot. I mean, there's so much going on this day right now. Hey, I want to congratulate Tony. 10 years, man. It's what a gas.
Thanks, Ron. I really appreciate that.
So why don't you kind of run down what you're up to here? You're trying to be a kind of a talent broker, as I understand.
Well, yeah, kind of. I've been doing some casting for like I cast a Ford Health Services commercial here, and I cast a feature that shot down in Seward here earlier this year, Christmas with a capital C. And I'm also the Screen Actors Guild representative for the state, too. And I think the best news is I serve now on the National Low Budget Committee for the Screen Actors Guild, and SAG is making it really attractive for independent filmmakers, especially filmmakers with no money.
How do you reckon that? A union actor can. Tell me more.
Well, for instance, there's a short film agreement. There's an ultra low budget agreement. You know, because you know SAG actors get paid. You know, like you know upwards from $750 a day.
Yeah.
Now the average low budget filmmaker can't afford that.
No.
So a short film under 35 minutes, you can do what we call in the biz. Payment deferred, which, of course, you learn at your SAG organization lecture that payment deferred means no pay ever. But it does allow the upcoming and young filmmakers to use SAG actors, of which we're starting to get a whole bunch of them up here now with all the recent movie activity.
Wow.
And I should mention that Christmas in the Capital C that we shot in Seward last year, I was casting director at that, and I also got cast in a pretty neat little part playing a reverend, which probably, as people know me, isn't exactly typecasting. Yeah. But we got like four new members into the guild from that. And these people, local Alaskan actors, were able to work with like Ted McGinley and Nancy Stafford and Daniel Baldwin. So
it was Katie really Wallach, is. Actually. I know Katie Wallach, who came up here, and I think she got her SAG card for that, right?
She did indeed. Katie and I were launched a campaign to make sure Katie got her SAG card.
No, that's exciting. I mean, I definitely SAG, it's SAG Indie, and they've got a really great website for any sort of independent films. And it's not just it's not just like 35 and under the shorts. It's also multiple different agreements from $2 million to below. So I've worked actually as an independent producer. I've worked with a lot of SAG Indie contracts.
Yeah,
Katie, it's really exciting. In fact, my partners Jan Walt and Tiffany Gwynn and I were in the process of raising the dough right now for this feature film that we're shooting up here. And we're able to do it because we've already pre-qualified for our tax incentive, and we can shoot on the modified low-budget agreement.
Yep.
Well,
no, perfect.
Yeah, hey Ron, what Christmas with a capital C, is that it? Did you enter that in competition in the festival this year?
You know, I don't know if they did or not. I thought they would. Tony would know.
You know, I believe they did not. I'm like I said, knowledgeable in most of the films, but I don't think you guys did. So
no, I think it's a straight to. I think it's straight to TV, right? I know the producer. I think his main form is he goes straight to TV, like a Lifetime movie.
Well, that was the thought, but then I just heard a rumor here recently that it got picked up by Sony Pictures for wide distribution next season.
Ooh.
Nice to hear.
Hey, it's Talk of Alaska, and we're talking the movie business as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from NMS, building a culture of safety through active caring. More information online at nmsusa.com. The Federal Aviation Administration sets rules for the operation of aircraft in airports and provides services to the flying public. Passengers are influential in making flying safer in Alaska, and when passengers know their rights and responsibilities, aviation is safer for everyone. There's more information online at faa.gov/go/flyalaska or toll-free at 1-866-357-4704. This message sponsored by the FAA.
Well, the weather's absolutely miserable outside our studio, but I'm getting the feeling here on the radio, inside the radio, as if I was in, oh, let's say some Tony cafe in Santa Monica, and it was movie people all around me, and I was listening in on everybody's gossip and indulging in some of my own. It's so much fun here. I've got Tony Shepard, the founder of the Anchorage International Film Festival. I've got Katie Miller of Patina Pictures from Los Angeles, and Ron Holmstrom on the phone. He's always got something going, 9 or 10 things going. Hey, Ron, I want to say goodbye to you because I got some more calls coming in. They want to add to the narrative.
Okay, great show, and bye, Steve, bye, Tony, bye, Katie.
See you, Ron.
Bye, Ron.
and Ron's one of those people in the community that you just don't know that's out there, but you don't think of, but he's been around a long time helping the industry.
Right, another one of the pioneers, and here's another one. Francine. Francine, welcome to Talk of Alaska. She's so busy, she's just moved right on. Well, let's go to Tim. Joins the program from Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Tim.
Thanks, Steve. You're doing a great job as always.
Oh.
I've got some kids who are interested in theater, but there's really nothing going on locally. I read in the paper that they don't have a soundstage up here. Could the university have that kind of facility? And if they did, would movie makers take advantage of it, or is it got to be a private, industry kind of thing?
I don't know. Katie,
I'm thinking
they passed the bond issue to build a new sports arena, so maybe that would leave the old sports arena available for something like this.
Yeah, I think there's been a lot of talks in trying to figure out exactly what a good space is. I think the problem with, UAA has a place, a little stage where Wales actually rented out and used for a little while. And it's definitely a great space. It just needs to be. I think it needs to be much larger and independent in order to really, really take off in the way that it needs to.
So basically what it needs to be is like an indoor, it's basically huge and indoors. That's what you need. So you can control what? Lighting and
sound. Lighting.
Yeah, and you can actually build a stage in there. And it can have, ideally, it'd have multiple different compartments so different productions could shoot at the same time.
Whoa.
Yeah, depending on how big they go. And I think they want to make it multimedia, too. So, if UAA wants to rent it out for their classrooms, and they could do that as well. If there was a big music venue that wanted to rent it out, they could do that as well. So I think they're trying to make it smart. So if you don't have a film there, it'll still be rented out by other venues.
Tim?
Who's they?
I'm not at liberty to talk about that right now. You're going to be in trouble. I think there's been some parties, some great developers
local
in Alaska.
Local money rather than government money or state money?
No, it's local money. And one of the major things that I've been really pushing for when we talk about this bill in this next session is really putting together an investor's incentive so that investors are interested. And Michigan passed this, Louisiana passed this when they were first starting out, really getting the investors in Alaska and the residents that are really excited about this, giving them an incentive to invest in their own infrastructure.
I see. The legislative work is not done, huh?
No. Yeah, because... this entire thing sunsets in 2013. So that would, I mean, as an investor interested in putting in money towards a large soundstage, you really need to remove that sunset, or else, you know, you never know what's going to happen. So I think that's the major concern, you know, in this next session that we're going to talk about, is really trying to remove that sunset, so we know that the government is on board and really excited about pushing this through for the next 5, 10 years, 20 years, so that investment makes sense.
Tim?
I'd love for my daughters and sons to be able to get a theater degree at UAA with real life experience at some kind of local, you know, local thing or on campus thing, maybe really be there, you know, flipping the switches and hauling the ropes and grunting around and learning what it means to be.
Right. Yeah. Well, we are, we're working on that. So, you know, give me a call in 2 years.
All right. Great. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for your call. Tim from Anchorage. Let's go to Sean now. Joins the program from Heidelberg. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Sean.
Hi, welcome. I just wanted to say we have a Haida Indian here who's a technical advisor and has been for 20 years. And I got to go to Vancouver with the senior class to chaperone them, and him and the producer gave us an extensive tour, and I couldn't believe how I was only 8 foot above the stage, and I'm afraid of heights, and it looked like I was up on top of a high rise. But he helps anyone who wants any kind of information. He will help them out. The thing is that they're in Vancouver, and they'd have to go there and stay. But I had no idea what it was to have a period film and the budget that it takes, and to have somebody want to create it to make it right so that someone else can look at it and say, hey, this is the way it is. And it was just so nice to see something like that. And the industry really does bring in a lot of money, and it's good for our art.
Yeah,
artistic integrity. It's a must have.
Mm-hmm.
Sean, I want to thank you for your call from down in Heidelberg there, and Katie, a little bit about that Vancouver. Vancouver has been quite the location, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it has been. It was the first first Canada in general, or the first people to get on board in terms of opening up these tax incentives, which then every single person went to Canada, and then, you know, or other foreign territories as well, and they were called runaway productions. And that was when the U.S. really kind of band together and said, okay, we need to start opening up tax incentives in our own states in order to keep this business in state. And then, you know, different states started opening up tax incentives, and Louisiana was a huge one. And that's kind of where we took, you know, took our productions back and made sure that they stayed in the U.S. Even, I mean, California was the last person. They just passed a tax incentive just this last year because they were losing out on $1 billion of their own folks going elsewhere and shooting their film.
California!
And they had to pass a tax incentive. I mean, it's not great. And, you know, I don't know if you've heard, but the state is not doing too well now.
So, I did hear.
You know, it's not comparable to Alaska by any means, but that was their push because they were just losing out on way too much business.
Well, Katie Miller, I want to thank you so much for being with us on the show today.
Well, thank you. It was lots of fun. I look forward to seeing you guys up there at the film festival.
Yeah, Katie, see you at your film.
Yeah, I'll be there.
Tony, you got 20 seconds. Anything you want
to... all I have to say is please come to the festival. I did make a mistake on that pass, so I have to revise that. It's $115 for the all events and all films pass. But otherwise, no, thanks for having me, Steve. Good to chat the film industry. Look forward to seeing it grow and look forward to this year's International Film Festival.
What do you think, if you had one word to characterize the difference of this festival compared to past in terms of the field of movies?
Oh my gosh, you're putting me on the spot here. I'd say the difference this year is that every film is spectacular. There's no weak films in the program.
Whoa. Okay.
And my favorite, The Silent Accomplice.
All
Come
right.
Come to see The Silent Accomplice.
Thank you so much. Thank you to Dave Waldron for being on the controls, Pat Yak and BD Trantina on the phones. I'm Steve Heimel.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by First National Bank Alaska, working shoulder to shoulder with Alaskan businesses for nearly a century, member FDIC, equal housing lender. Elks National Foundation, in conjunction with the Alaska State Elks Association and local lodges, is offering the Most Valuable Student MVS Scholarship for high school seniors. These scholarships are awarded to graduating high school seniors through a local, state, and national competition and are based on scholarship, leadership, and financial need. Information and applications available at elks.org/ENF. Application deadline is December 1st, 2010. This message sponsored by the Alaska Elks Association. Views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at aprn.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.